Chapter 1. Scowling and warm behind the ears, Landry Sutton picked himself up off the hoof-hardened ground of Walker Parish's main corral. Stubbornly setting his jaw and squaring his shoulders, he laid silent claim to his dignity, and finally bent to retrieve what remained of his hat. The bronc, a gelding aptly named Pure Misery, had stomped it flat in the brief but hectic process of throwing him that third and, for today, final time. Landry reckoned he should be glad his skull hadn't met the same fate as his headgear, but he couldn't quite make the philosophical shift from adrenaline-fused annoyance to gratitude. He was frustrated, embarrassed, and pissed off, and those were just the emotions he had names for. Arrogance on four legs, the sweat-lathered horse took a few prancing turns around the corral, moving outward in ever-widening circles. He snorted once or twice, nostrils flared, neck bowed into a curve, head held high and proud, ears laid so far back they were almost flat against his hide. Finally, the gelding came to a purposeful halt, about a dozen yards away from Landry, hind legs planted firmly in the dirt, flanks quivering with a barely contained strength that seemed about to bust loose in a whole new way, like a primeval thunderstorm. "Go on, cowboy. Try it again." That was the message. Slowly, Landry became aware of their immediate surroundings, his and the horses, that son of Satan, though most of what lay beyond their battleground was still a dust-roiled haze, a void with its own heartbeat. Landry did register the presence of his brother Zane, perched on the top rail of the corral fence. He knew his sibling was looking on with charitable, even benign interest, waiting to see what would happen next. Was Landry fool enough to get back on that crazy cayuse, he might have been wondering, or would he finally see reason and call it a day? "Anything broken?" Zane called in a jocular drawl. He was only 13.5 months older than Landry, but the gap might have been wider by a decade, considering the dynamics between the two of them. Zane tended to come from the place of older and wiser, like a father or a venerable uncle, or a justice of the Supreme Court. Stung anew, Landry merely glared in Zane's general direction for a few moments, then slapped his ruined hat against one thigh to vent some of the steam still building inside him. A handful of ranch workers, all employed by Walker Parish, local rodeo stock contractor, and older brother to Zane's wife, Briley, ducked their heads briefly in half-assed attempts to hide their grins of enjoyment. It was no big stretch to figure out what the other men were thinking, of course. After nearly a year in Montana, Landry was still an outsider, still that dandified greenhorn from Chicago, still the perennial dude. Still and always, the great Zane Sutton's kid brother. And not much more. 6 feet tall, smart as hell, and a self-made man, an independently wealthy one, no less, and a ranch owner in his own right, Landry normally didn't sweat the small stuff. The fact was, he'd never failed at anything he set out to do in all his 30-plus years of life, unless you counted his efforts to stay married to Susan Ingersoll without committing murder, that was. To him, the ill-fated marriage had been a disaster, yes, but he wouldn't have described it as an actual defeat. He and Susan never should have tied the knot in the first place, if only because they hadn't wanted the same things, even in the beginning. Now, aching in every muscle, bones seeming as brittle as if he'd aged by 20 years since breakfast, his pride chafed raw as a sore with a scab ripped off too soon, Landry watched glumly as one of the ranch hands roped the bronc, led him out of the corral, and turned him loose in the adjoining pasture. Zane stood next to Landry now, there in the slowly settling dust. "Buy a beer," he said quietly. He started to raise one hand.